Welcome to the Human and Technology Podcast. This podcast is for anyone who develops, distributes, or uses technology. For all those who always have the feeling that technology overwhelms or dominates them. For everyone who wants to know how to deal with technology in everyday life. For anyone who wants to understand what technology does to us and how we can get our lives back. This podcast is for those who want to make technology sexy. All the product developers, designers, UX, UI professionals, product managers, CTOs, and CEOs. And it is for you. My name is Dr. Peter Ryska. My friends call me Dr. Peter. I am your host, and I am happy that you are here. Welcome to today's episode of the Human Technology Podcast. Today I will focus on an issue that is under discussion in automotive HMIs since 20, 25 years, more or less. More or less since I am in this area, which is not based on me, but it is there. And it comes and goes in waves, and we have a couple of tendencies in this area. And so I will make a quick analysis and give you my view on certain parts of this issue. And the issue is touchscreen versus haptic interaction in cars. Which one is better? And if we have a look at the market, there are many cars out there that focus more and more on glass surfaces where you find touchscreen interfaces. And on the other side, we are having, for example, Volkswagen stepping back from that and saying, hey, no, touch-only interfaces are not the optimum. This is not what we will go to. But we will put in haptic components. And this is one of the triggers where I thought, hey, this could be a good thing to make an episode on, to talk about, to think about, to give you my views on the role of haptics on automotive dashboards. I have three focus points here. The first one is, why is this so interesting? Why is automotive special? What is the difference between an automotive HMI and, for example, an app HMI? Or what is the difference between a car dashboard and an aircraft cockpit? So, first part, quick analysis on why is automotive special. The second one is a bit about history and today's market. A few words about how did it come and what was the role of touchscreens in the past? What is it today? And what have I seen, for example, at the CES this year? What are the trends in here? And then the options that we have, touchscreen, central controllers, buttons, hard keys. I will try to analyze where is the sweet spot, what are the pros and the cons of the single solutions. All right, so let's kick it off. Why is automotive different than other domains? First thing is, cars are ubiquitous. Cars are everywhere. Almost everyone owns a car. Every adult in a, let's say, between 20 and 70, almost everyone has a car. And in Germany, we have some like 45, 46 million cars for 80 million persons all over living here. So yeah, this is the idea. So cars are ubiquitous, they're everywhere. Let's say almost everyone has one, which indicates something, that we as an industry accept every user. More or less everyone in a suitable age and in a suitable health status and with an appropriate education, but everyone can drive a car. An 80-year-old grandma, an 18-year-old young guy, they all are drivers. They're all potential drivers. We try to meet their needs with always the same product. So if you want to buy a certain car from a certain brand, a certain model, they do not differ between, let's say, experienced drivers and inexperienced drivers, male and female drivers, between older and younger drivers. So we take everyone for every car. And this is one point, that we need to find a solution that fits both the experienced ones that want to have high efficiency and that are ready to take a certain complexity to have features just as much as beginners that want to have a reduced complexity, reduced number maybe of features or of options or of possibilities they're having in there. So we take everyone. Opposed to, for example, aircraft pilots. Pilots are a highly selected user group. You have to have a certain age, you have to have a very good health status, you are highly educated, you're super trained. You have to return to trainings every couple of months. You have to go back to a flight simulator and you have to fly there. So, totally different kind of user group, totally different expectations. They're professionals. They're making money by using an aircraft. Only a very few of us make money while driving a car. Sure, we have these delivery drivers and taxi drivers, and yeah, there are a few, but the vast majority of car drivers is not making money while driving. So this is the first point, and this is what we have to consider if we design an automotive HMI. Second thing, cars are awfully complex. They are the most complex everyday objects we have around us. So let's leave all these professional equipments like aircrafts, like trains, like control devices, like medical devices. Let's leave them on the side. But if we take all the rest, cars are by far the most complex object we have. So smartphones are already pretty complex. But what we do is we have the car with its own complexity as far as drivetrains are concerned, as well as driving behavior, braking, aerodynamics, crash safety. All of that is the complexity of a car. And then we add the complexity of a smartphone. So the car with the smartphone capabilities, which is more or less the standard today, this adds up in complexity. And so cars are very complex. Major point here is we still have, and in the near future, we will still have a strong focus on driving. So driving is and will remain for the foreseeable future the main task of the person behind the steering wheel. And all the rest, we talk about primary functions like steering and the pedals that you have, speeding, keeping the car in lane, keeping the distance to other cars, keeping the car safely on the road. This is the main task, the primary task. We have secondary tasks like indicators, like lights, like honking the horn, like windscreen wipers. And then we have tertiary tasks, which focus on infotainment, navigation, communication, internet access, data access, and all of these things. And we will focus here on the tertiary tasks. But we have a focus on this one at the moment. Driving is even on level 2 automation, which forces the driver to remain in the control loop all the time, and level 3 automation, which allows the driver only in very specific use cases and specific locations and specific environments to pull out of the control loop. But you have to return within a short time. So driving is the main thing in cars, and it will remain the main thing in cars for the driver in the future. And so the HMI solutions have to be different. If I interact with a smartphone, if I play around with an app, That's the only thing I do usually. Some people walk around and do that, and then they run against poles. But let's put it that way. If I have a smartphone in my hand, that is the main task. And the interaction with a smartphone HMI is the only thing that I do, which is not the case in a car. So all the tertiary tasks, everything that we have on a touchscreen, every interaction we have is not the main task. This is the major thing why we have different HMI solutions in cars. We need different HMI solutions in cars compared to smartphones, smart homes, smart TVs, smart whatever's all the consumer devices that we use. Another point is after our houses and apartments that we buy, cars are the second most expensive object that we buy during our lifetime. They are very expensive, and only houses and apartments, real estate, is more expensive than that. And that's the reason all these things, the ubiquity of cars, the complexity of cars, the focus on driving, and the price that we pay for the cars, this leads to the fact that we need other HMIs, other human-machine interfaces, other interaction paradigms compared to consumer devices. We need to be as simple as a consumer device, but we need to take care about a safe handling of a super high complexity. Second point, a bit about history. We have cars on the road with dashboards, with human-machine interfaces since about 120 years now. And over the most time, the longest time, we had what I call the one-to-one-to-one paradigm in HMI. One device has one function and it is in one location. Those are basically these traditional buttons, sliders, rotaries that we find on dashboards. And thus, this was the only way of interacting with a car on the radios and the air conditions and everything that we have beyond the driving thing. We had all these buttons until about the mid-1990s. Until then, we had this one-to-one-to-one thing, one device, usually a button slider, rotary for one function, temperature of my air condition, my seat heating, my window lifters, and that is in exactly one location. 1994, BMW had the first infotainment system in the 7 Series. That was called, insiders call it the E38, which is the internal code for that. And there was a screen on the dashboard, 6-inch, maybe 5-inch, and a rotary push and a couple of hard keys. And the nice thing here, a little anecdote on the side, if you have a look at this HMI, you can see that the audio functions, particularly the radio, they had separate devices. For example, the station, the storage of stations, these 6 stored stations, that's still 6 separate buttons there on the dashboard. And yeah, a couple of other things still remained with traditional hard keys. They were not part of the screen. And there's a saying, show me your HMI and I will draw your org chart. My belief is that the radio department, the audio department within BMW in the mid-90s did a very strong position. And they said, oh, no. Our beautiful, nice controls for this very important functions, they will not go into this ugly screen and into this menu structure. Something that is not the case anymore today. But at that time, it must have been like that. So 1994, first rotary push device in a car to select from menus, to do things. There was a navigation in there, tape to putting in the destinations, fine-tuning the navigation. That was the state of the art there. Then in around 2000-2001, the follow-up 7 Series, the E65, came out. And that was the car with the very first iDrive. One device for a huge amount of functions. They put in all the air condition, they put in all the communication, they put in everything about navigation, all the audio things. Everything was controlled with this one single device. Roughly around the same time, the Audi put out its MMI, the multimedia interface with the so-called Quadro Logic. So they had rotary push as well, but a couple of hard keys, four hard keys around that to get access to additional functions. So that was the status in 2001. A little later, roughly at the same time, Lexus, the Japanese car maker Lexus, came out with the first touchscreen systems. I have been doubtful at that time. Is that the right technology? Is this a good thing? And then history proved me wrong. Today, what we see is enormous amounts of glass in cars, huge touchscreen interfaces. But I was doubtful. I'm still doubtful that touchscreens only are the best solutions. And this is where we go into in the analysis in the next part of this episode. But Lexus were out there very early. And the German premium car makers, Audi, BMW, Mercedes, they very long communicated, we will not have touchscreens in cars because they don't have haptic feedback, because you cannot use them lightly. So the arguments that I will put out during this podcast, they were used by the German premium OEMs 15, 20 years ago. Porsche, interestingly, went a different way at that time. They combined a rotary push with a touchscreen. And there was a total redundancy. So you could do everything in that car with a rotary push, and you could do everything with a touchscreen. I found this at that time, and I was at Harman at that time, and my team developed the HMI, the concept, the graphics for Porsche. This redundancy was a super interesting thing, because in some use case it was super natural to use the rotary push. For example, if you have a selection out of a list, if you wanted to scroll through longer lists, so the swiping as we have it today on smartphone, that was not integrated there. But if you wanted to, for example, type in a destination, then the touchscreen was the far better device to use. And I would have loved to get the data out of that. Who's doing what and which use case and which function is used with which of these two devices? They never gave me the data. I'm sure they have it at Porsche, but I never got hold of that. All right, to make a long story short, today we have an enormous amount of numbers of cars with touchscreens. So I drive a lot of rental cars when I'm on my second home in Mallorca. And there is hardly any car without a touchscreen. So I would guess about 90% of the cars that I've been driving have a touchscreen. I talked with one representative of Forvia, Faurecia, at the CES in January, and we agreed that the demonstrator on the Forvia booth, the prototype they showed there, was the only car on the entire show without a touchscreen. So they are absolutely dominant in cars today. That is a fact. We have, for example, the Hi-Fi, the Chinese car maker, which, as I have heard, is close to being bankrupt. But they have a huge amount of glass on the car. And I don't say they are bankrupt because they have this. They will be different reasons. But that is a very good example of a full glass cockpit. Same for Tesla. They have hardly any hard keys left. And they were the first ones to go the entire way and say, we put everything into one single touchscreen, a big touchscreen on the center stack. And as I have heard in my network, it was not due to the usability or user experience or human factors point, but it was a price saving point, a money saving point. So it was, they were lowering the price by reducing the hard keys. But anyway, it is a fact that is out there. And we have a couple of existing cockpit architectures today, the more traditional way with a display behind the steering wheel, one in the center stack, maybe a hand-up display and some less traditional setups like pillar-to-pillar displays, as we see it in many cars. Some solutions are without a cluster, like the Tesla or the VinFast. Some have a head-up display, some not. But those are the basic cockpit structures we have. But a touchscreen is almost everywhere. And then, of course, we have the multimodality. We have speech, we have gestures, we have artificial intelligence that will influence HMIs. But these are technologies I will not put a focus on here, but we talk about the touchscreen, the visual, the interfaces that we have here. Okay, so let's get into the analysis. So what options do we have? We have touchscreens and we have haptic devices. And both have clear pros and cons. Let's get into it. So the pros of a touchscreen. What are the advantages of a touchscreen? The first one is you have the opportunity for a very direct manipulation of the screen contents. We have a direct interaction. So you see an icon, it says radio, and you press this one, and then you're in the radio. There is no additional interface. There is no additional layer in the communication between the driver and the technology. So it's a very direct thing. You press something, you swipe something, you slide up and down, and then you select an entry from a list, or and then you get right into it. So it's a very direct thing. Second one is we have a very high external consistency with touchscreens. We all have, and all means 95-99% of us here on the show, I think it's 100%, we all have smartphones. And all these smartphones have touchscreens. So we're used to that. We have our smartphones in our hands about 53 days per year, full 24-hour days, so 53, 55 days per year. We have this in our hand. We fiddle around with a touchscreen, which is about a sixth of our lifetime, of our entire lifetime, including sleep, that we use these touchscreens, which is a huge time, which is far too much, if you ask me, but we are used to that. So we have learned it. We have learned all the interaction paradigms. We have learned about what we can do this. And external consistency means that I can take the experience I have collected with one device in one domain to another device, to another domain. So we can transfer all the knowledge, all the experience we have gained with touchscreens in smartphones into cars. Which is a good thing, because we can reuse what we have learned, and this makes touchscreens a very strong choice for cars. And touchscreens are highly flexible. Imagine you have a cockpit of a car with no touchscreen, with no complex interaction device, but you want to add a new function to that. You will have then, you will need to put in an additional button. And in the old times, in the 80s and 90s, there were cars that had something like in the maximum, with the maximum features, with the maximum number of features, they had something like, I don't know, 20 buttons on the dashboard or 25. But if you had not all the features, if you said, I don't want to have an air condition, I don't want to have a sunroof, whatever, then you had empty buttons there. They were just, little dysfunctional button lookalikes on these holes that you had in the dashboard. And with a touchscreen, you don't have these problems. If you want to add a feature, and we all know with these over-the-air updates that you get software updates, and then there is a new feature, adding a new button, adding a new icon to adding a new list entry to a touchscreen HMI is absolutely super easy. You just do it, and then you have it. The same is that you can offer different skins. You can say, okay, you can have a sporty design with a lot of red in it and a sporty, aggressive font. You can have a conservative appearance with, let's say, a more brownish style and very traditional font. And then you may have an eco style in blue or in green. And yeah, so you have these opportunities. And you can even go beyond that, beyond the skinning. You can individualize them. You can say, okay, I want to just have 5 entries per screen. I want to have 7 entries per screen. I want to have this background picture. I want to have that color set. Yeah, so all this is possible in touchscreens. And this is the positive thing about this. The big disadvantage, the major disadvantage, the major point of criticism that I have with touchscreens is they don't provide haptic feedback. Feedback is always visual on touchscreens, which means that if I want to do something on a touchscreen device, I need to take my eyes off the road, I need to find the right button on the touchscreen, press it, and then return my eyes to the road. And that quickly adds up to a couple of seconds, which is a long time on roads, which makes driving very unsafe, which is a high amount of driver distraction if you do this. I'm driving a BMW with an iDrive in it. It's not the latest, but the second latest version of the iDrive. And I have been driving BMWs almost all the time in the past 25 years. So I went through all the generations of the iDrive. And today's version, or the version I have, I find this very, very good because it has this rotary in the middle and you have these distinct buttons, these clearly designed buttons and that you can press. And if I want to switch, for example, between main screen and map, I know the main screen is the middle upper button, which has a different shape than the upper right button, which is the map button, and I can feel them. And if I, for example, have the main screen on with media and map on a highway, and I will leave the highway and drive into a city, and I know I will need the map pretty soon to orient myself in an unknown environment, then I can, without taking my eyes off the road, touch the upper right button of the device, press it, and then I have the map active and I can use it when I need it. So this is not possible on a touchscreen. You cannot use it blindly, which is, from my point of view, the biggest disadvantage touchscreens have. They're simply not really safe to use. Second point is, they're pretty hard to use in cars if you do not drive on a straight German or US American or whatever well-maintained highway. If you have potholes, if you have curves, it shakes. It is very difficult to keep your hand on the screen. Even passengers, even the co-drivers have problems in interacting this. So as I said, I drive a lot in Mallorca, and Mallorquin roads are not that well maintained, and they are very narrow and very curvy. And even the person on the passenger seat is having problems in selecting the right things because it's shaky. You cannot hold on to something. You do not have something to touch if you want to interact it. So there is something like a 30-40% opportunity of just pressing the wrong button, because right in the moment, if you want to press something, there is a curve or there is a bump, the bumper or a pothole, and suddenly you press the wrong button. This happens on touchscreens. It does not happen anywhere else. And then I'm a very aesthetic guy. I like to have it beautiful in my car. If you enter a car with a large amount of glass in it and it's turned off, you have this big black area and it's dirty. It has dust on it. It has hairs on it. There are fingerprints on it. And if you enter a rental car and you can see, okay, they haven't cleaned it properly before, there are fingerprints of other persons in there, that is a negative feeling. I mean, they are there even in they're everywhere, yeah, but I don't see them. I have this impression when I enter a car that it is not really a clean thing. And then what I see in the past is, or today, and in today's HMI solutions, is that it is very indulgent to over-design a touchscreen, to put in more things that are really required to do things just because they are possible, to make it look a little more beautiful or a little more artsy or a little more of this and that. And then, you have sometimes not very nice solutions. All right, so let's move on to the haptic devices. The pros are basically the opposite of the cons of of the touchscreen. With this haptic feedback, you can use it blindly. You can use it safe while driving without keeping without taking your eyes off the road. You can use these devices. You can feel them if you know them well. You have something to hold on. So if you have a rotary push device, a big, nice device on the center stack or a bit between the front seats, you can hold on to that. And even if you drive through curves, if you have bumps, if you have potholes, then you can still use it safely because you have something to hold on. You know where you are, you know what you do. And this is the big, big pro of haptic devices. The con is you very often have, if you have buttons, if you have single devices, you have the one-to-one-to-one paradigm, meaning you have one device for one function, which makes it somehow unflexible. You very often have an own design language, an own interaction in these devices. So there is not a real consistency on dashboards. So you maybe have a rotary for the temperature of the air condition, and then you have a couple of buttons for the frequency of the van, for the strength of the van, ventilator. Yeah, so that is maybe very, very inconsistent. And we have a lot of functions in cars. As I said, cars are today the most complex devices we use in everyday life. And then we end up with what I call interaction device graveyards. So there's a graveyard of interaction devices. There's tons of devices in the car. Buttons and sliders and rotaries. And yeah, then in some of the professional cars, you have panels, interaction panels, that have something like 10 by 10 buttons in some kind of order on a single panel. And this makes it not very easy to use. This compensates some of the pros of the haptic interaction because it's so overloaded with functions. And so those are the cons of the haptic interaction devices. So what are the results out of it? Maybe there is a sweet spot between touchscreens and hard keys, interaction devices, haptic interaction devices, central controllers. Definitely, there is an optimum, which may not be a sweet spot because it doesn't exist, but there is definitely an optimum. And somewhere in the middle, even if we do not have an optimum or a sweet spot, but somewhere in the middle, there will probably be the best solutions. And I can see this when I design HMIs for my clients. Touchscreen-only solutions are not the latest thing. Usually we have a row of buttons, 5, 7, 10 buttons with functions, with the most important functions. And the art now is identifying which are the most important functions, which are the most useful functions on a hard key. But that seems to be the best solution. So creating a balance between the pros, the undoubtedly existing pros that we have with a touchscreen and the undoubtedly existing pros of an haptic interaction device. My belief is central controllers like the BMW iDrive, the Audi, do they still call it MMI? I have no idea. But these devices, they seem to be the optimum. So BMW, I think, is there the benchmark that we should think about. particularly if it looks good, if it's well done, if it's a massive object, if it is providing a good and adaptive haptic feedback, and then a couple of additional buttons that are clearly and easy to select and to press. And of course, I mentioned that in the middle of the podcast, but this was not the focus today. There will be other modalities. I don't believe in gestures too much. I mean, sitting in your car and making strange things with your hands to do something, I don't believe in this. But speech, voice recognition will definitely be, and it will be even better. I'm not totally convinced by what I see in cars today, even this latest high-end voice recognition systems. I'm working with one, I'm having one in one of my cars, and I'm interacting a lot with that. And the more I use it, the more I find out it is still buggy. It is still not on the level I want to have it. It is still not what is really, really easy to use and gives you a positive user experience. It is convincing at the first sight, at the first try, but if you work longer with this, you find out, this isn't working, this isn't working, this isn't working. And now it didn't understand me for the third time in a row. So big problems there. But that will be in cars and will be there in the future. And we will have artificial HMI, artificial intelligence HMIs that may become a game changer, a strong game changer. I believe very much in that, that artificial intelligence will redefine the way we interact with vehicles. So if you like this podcast episode, why not recommending it in your network? The more listeners I have, the higher I will be ranked at the respective platforms, and the even more people have the chance to get into my way of thinking, to grab the information I'm providing here, to interact with me. So feel free to recommend the Human Technology Podcast in your network. That's it for today. Thank you for spending time with me. I hope you were able to take something with you and do something for yourself that will be forever. For an ongoing exchange, you will find me on LinkedIn and on my websites, peter-rusker.com and beyond-hmi.de. Write me an email on the podcast at beyond-hmi.de. Tune in next time, take care, and stay healthy.